Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Osiris.
Hello, old friends. I'm Brian Brinkman.
I'm David Goldstein. It's January 31st, 2022. Pat yourself on the back. You're almost out of January. Unfortunately for you, you get to celebrate being almost out of January with the new episode of The Drop.
It is kind of crazy. We're 1 month down in this new year. January is always so weird, man, because like you enter it, and until like January 10th or 12th, I always get confused. Like, is it still the year prior? Does this new year have any immediate vibe? And then you end the month, and suddenly you're in the second month of the year. And then this is like a short month. And without like any thought, you're going to like blink, and suddenly, you know, you're going to see a few flowers blooming, and there's going to be that one really nice spring day, and you're like, oh my God, it's coming. Spring is coming, and it's mid-March, and then basketball comes back, and then it gets kind of gloomy again for 6 or 8 weeks before summer actually comes here. But, you know, we're starting to make that initial turn. It's kind of wild.
I hate February a little less than I hate January, just because there's like February school break. There's Valentine's Day, which also happens to be my niece's birthday. Like you said, as you get closer to March and you look down the snow and you see like the daffodil, the petunia starting to bloom, you can think like hope springs eternal. But yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the first 2 months of the year. That's all right.
It's a weird thing that like the year turns over in the middle of winter. You would think that like there'd be logic. You would think that, like, there'd be logic in the year turning over at a time of year that most people like. Like, imagine if June was the end of the year and July was the start of the year. How different the start of a year would feel in the middle of summer. I don't know. You know, it's just, it feels like a weird slog getting through the early start, the early part of a year, you know?
I would concur entirely. Speaking of lack of logic. This is, I don't know, maybe you or the listeners will find this funny, but I was in the shower this morning, which is where I do most of my thinking. And I was thinking back to 1991, which would have been almost a little more than 30 years ago at this point, or even 1992, for some reason I started thinking about Sammy Hagar and how there was a Van Halen song from 1991 off of the Unlawful Carnal Knowledge record that was about, like, phone sex. It was a song called, like, Spank, and Sammy Hagar is singing about the Spank line, 1-900-SPANK, and I'm thinking, Eddie Van Halen was like 36, 37 years old. Didn't he think that there was a chance the song would age really badly? And like Van Halen are singing about phone sex? It's just wrong. Like, why is this a thing? Is basically what I'm saying. Is that even like, I don't know. That's just, my mind drifts some weird places at the end of January. I don't know.
Looking at the song list for this record, and there's a 4-song run of Pleasure Dome, In and Out, which I've got to imagine is not about cheeseburgers, Man on a Mission, and The Dream is Over, which, you know, you could just create your own story around those 4 songs right there. I will say, though, that For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge has one of the best Van Halen songs ever in Right Now.
Yeah, I think, Right Now, plus that was like David Wright's at-bat music at Citi Field. I think In and Out is actually not what you think it's about. I think it's kind of about like the trouble of living in like early 90s, almost Clinton era America. Mm. Like Sammy Hagar sings like, you can have it now, but you got to pay for it later. They got you going in. They got you going out. Same amount. Woo! In and out. So kind of like the Who Won't Get Fooled Again type thing through the lens of Sammy Hagar.
It's a great eternal message towards progressivism, isn't it?
I think Pleasure Dome actually, when they played it live, it had this really self-indulgent, like, Alex Van Halen drum solo, which became Pleasure Dome.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's not actually a dome where Sammy Hagar does, like weird pleasurable things. I think it's more of like a Mad Max, you know, type. But Thunderdome.
The Thunderdome.
Anyway.
The Van Halen Dome. Well, speaking of anniversaries of sorts, we were talking earlier this week, 10 years ago, right around now, Cloud Nothings put out an absolutely incredible record called Attack on Memory that I think you and I both have very vivid memories of the experience of this. I was, I hadn't been home in, I want to say, 14 or 15 months as of early January 2012. I was cooking in Portland, Oregon, and it was really expensive to fly back to Chicago. So my girlfriend at the time, fiance at the time, I guess, we were getting married in 6 months. We bought, like, you know, off tourist season flights from Portland to Chicago. Went home, saw the whole family. And one of the nights I was at home, and I was checking pitchfork.com, and they just upped the new reviews for the next day. And Ian Cohen of IndieCast and of Pitchfork wrote a 8.7 best new music review of Attack on Memory. And 8.7 is one of those scores where you're like, oh, fuck. I don't even care if I have no idea who this artist is. I have to listen to this record. You know, it just got that vibe to it. And, I remember downloading it, putting it on right then and there, and listening to it twice through and just being blown away. That was an incredible record in 2012, and that is a record that definitely still holds up 10 years later. It doesn't necessarily sound like it was a part of a, like, it still sounds relevant in this moment, but it will always remind me of 2012.
Well, I mean, it sounds like awesome Steve Albini produced, Wipers inspired rock and roll. Like, that is an indie rock record in every sense of the word, just because few things rock as hard as that album, which came out in 2012. And a lot of the credit has to go to the drummer, Jason Garrett, who was, I guess, the Cloud Nothings guy, Dylan Baldy. This was, I think, the first record where he actually kind of, like, took a band and brought that band into the studio to bang it out, because I think the previous Cloud Nothings records were poppier, kind of, like, basement recording at my parents' house projects. But yeah, this record, I mean, in addition to still being awesome today, it really kind of turned, jump-started Cloud Nothings into one of, like, the most reliable competent indie rock bands going. I mean, after this record, I think 2 years later, they put out the almost as good Here and Nowhere Else. Excellent record. The one after that, I think, was called Life Without Sound. A little more polished, still very good. They've got a crazy one called Last Building Burning. I mean, they've almost gotten to the Spoon, New Pornographers, like Yola Tango platform, where they just keep putting out records to fans. It can constantly sell out like 2,000 seat venues, and people love them. They're an excellent band.
Yeah, it's amazing how he's gone. He went from like the bedroom to just complete consistency in terms of the records that he was releasing, because he was just making, you know, very small records in the late 2000s, early 2010s, and then suddenly just like jumped up a level in such a quick fashion. It was pretty remarkable stuff.
And I think to thrive during the pandemic, what he did was he started offering subscriptions on Bandcamp, where I think he would give you like 4 new songs a month. Or, I mean, in addition, like the last full Cloud Nothings record, The Shadow, I remember it came out, I want to say February of 2021. But I guess he had a bunch of excess songs that he just kept recording and kept giving out to subscribers. So yeah, he's a workhorse.
Yeah, endless work. Speaking of a workhorse, you are seeing a workhorse band in, hopefully, what is your date of seeing The War on Drugs?
I am supposed to see The War on Drugs at Madison Square fucking Garden on Saturday, January 29th. This is, of course, provided, I think they had to cancel the first 2 or 3 dates of their tour because there was a COVID case in their touring party. So provided that doesn't slow them down, and provided the snow doesn't slow them down, because I think we're potentially supposed to get like 6 to 8 inches of snow here in New York City on Saturday. The show, I think, before that, I think they're playing 2 nights before in Philadelphia, so, I mean, they should be able to get here. But who knows? The last time I wanted to see a concert that literally got postponed by a snowstorm was, I was going to go see Aerosmith. I think I was in the 8th grade, and it snowed so much in New Haven, Connecticut, they had to cancel that show. There was a makeup date, but by the time the makeup date came around, I didn't think Aerosmith was cool anymore, so I didn't even go.
So between now, when we're recording, and the time that this episode goes live, you will have either seen The War on Drugs at Madison Square Garden, or you will not. Let's go with the idea that you are going to see The War on Drugs at Madison Square Garden. How are you feeling about potentially seeing them at Madison Square Garden? We'll do the review in the next episode.
Oh, I'm very excited. I'll wear my strong N95 mask that'll attach square to my face. I probably won't eat or drink, but I've got tickets in the very reliable section 119. I'm going to go with one of my closest friends from high school. It's going to be a rock show, and those guys deserve to have a rock show because they are arena rock in every sense of the word. Give me like some mid-1980s Springsteen, a lot of Hornsby. You know, they really should be at the Garden. I know the show's not sold out. I think as it probably gets closer, they'll probably sell a lot of tickets like the day before, day of. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this more than anything I've looked forward to in quite a while.
Yeah, I'm excited for them to play at the Garden. I'm really excited to see what these set lists entail, because we've got 10 new songs that were not played on previous tours. And, you know, there's always that interesting moment when they go out on a tour of what songs from the last album kind of drop off. And I'll be curious to see. You know, you've got to imagine Baby Missiles is going to still stick around from Slave Ambient. They were playing Arms Like Boulders a lot in 2015 and 2017. That probably sticks around from Wagon Wheel Blues. But do we lose another song off the rotation from Lost in the Dream? You've got to imagine songs like Clean Living and You Don't Have to Go and forgetting the middle song on A Deeper Understanding. But like, right, you got to imagine those songs are going to fall off, and like, you know, the songs from A Deeper Understanding that will stay are Thinking of a Place and Pain and
In Chains, maybe?
In Chains will probably stay. the opening track. I'm blanking on a lot of song titles right now, but you know, you've got to imagine like they're going to try to focus on this new record in chunks throughout the overall show. So what falls off will be kind of fascinating because they're reaching this interesting point in their career where they're suddenly going to have such a big song catalog that they could really change the set list up, but they are still a band promoting an album. So I'll be curious to see how those set lists unfold, and I will be seeing them just about 3 weeks from now.
Yeah, usually, I mean, I would guess that War on Drugs, it's kind of like the same thing with the band, the Tragically Hip. When they made set lists, every set list was kind of like maybe like three quarters of the record they were touring behind and then hits. So it's always interesting deciding what they considered to be the hits from the prior records that were good enough to stick in the set list. But yeah, I mean, you figure you'll still get like obviously, Ocean in Between the Waves, the first song off of off Lost in the Dream.
Under the Pressure.
Under the Pressure, of course.
It's amazing how big a War on Drugs fans we are, and we're just kind of like, you know, that song, and then this song, and then that song. I blank on song titles at this point in my life.
I think the first song, A Deeper Understanding, was called Up All Night.
Up All Night, great live track.
Kind of like a baby brother to Under the Pressure.
Yeah. Yeah,
similar chords.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But speaking of the, you know, potential COVID-ness hanging over this, yours truly is currently on day 7 of quarantine from his family. I'm starting to emerge as I've moved beyond the symptoms, and I still have a little bit of congestion, as you can probably hear. But, you know, overall, I've moved past a very mild case of COVID, and by the time this episode goes live, I should be re-engaged fully with the outside world again, and filled with not only pharmaceutical antibodies, but also now natural antibodies, which, you know, certain podcasters will tell you is the way to go. I'm not certainly advocating for anyone to go and experiment out in the world in this manner. I think I'm incredibly lucky to be young and healthy in the time of a pandemic where I also followed science and I happened upon a natural infection of this crazy disease, this crazy virus that we've been avoiding for the last 2 years. It's kind of weird to be in a position to have and then have had COVID.
Yeah, I've been giving Brian like listening projects while he holds up in the Beyond the Pond studio. I told him to listen to all the Rush albums from the 80s. So hopefully he did that and we can make a future episode out of it.
Not only did I do that, but I watched the Rush documentary. And so I think there's a future Beyond the Pond episode because I'm quite fascinated by the origins of the band Rush.
There's a few. Well, the one you probably watched is Beyond the Lighted Stage in 2009.
Yeah, it was the one on Netflix where
that's a great documentary.
Really, really well made.
It's the one where Billy Corgan talks about the song Entre Nous on Permanent Waves and says, like, I had to play the song for my mother and I had to read the lyrics to her so we could understand our relationship based upon this one Rush song.
There's a moment early on in the documentary where Billy Corgan, who is like so reviled now for a variety of reasons, speaks to this idea of, you know, in rock history, you are oversaturated with Led Zeppelin. You're oversaturated with the Beatles. But a band like Rush is still there and they're a part of rock history, but nobody understands them because they weren't popular enough or because nobody, you know, in the mainstream rock media wanted to understand them. And he's like, to understand the whole story, you have to understand a band like Rush. I drew a lot of parallels to that quote to a band like Fish that we both love dearly and even, you know, to the Grateful Dead. And it was really wild to hear Billy Corgan speak so clearly and so just like passionately in a way that I agreed with, because that doesn't happen as much anymore.
Even Geddy Lee, when he was doing press for that show, obviously Geddy Lee being Rush's bassist and singer, he said that he like couldn't believe how eloquent that Billy Corgan was about Rush.
Yeah, it was amazing.
He's like Billy Corgan really surprised us.
But I will just say, you know, this whole it's been interesting having this virus after 2 years, because I spent much of the last 2 years avoiding it, when I got vaccinated, I think I had the same sentiment that a lot of people had, where I felt this newfound freedom and I could re-enter the world. Obviously, we learned a lot via Delta. I still went to concerts in the fall. I avoided a few concerts as a result of Delta. We had kind of hunkered down once Omicron started. But at the same time, you know, my own personal perspective was kind of at the point where we need to just kind of re-engage and allow this to kind of work through us. I was saddened to see a lot of concerts be postponed, you know, out of the concerns of it. It was very understandable when they were postponed as a result of infections within crews, within bands themselves. But I took a trip that had been planned for a number of years with some college friends, and unfortunately caught it on that trip, which I'm surprised I didn't catch it at a Phish show in the fall. I was honestly like expecting that. I kind of figured this is the risk I'm taking going into a room full of 18,000 people. Didn't happen then, and it happened to happen here. And I'm very lucky. It's been a very mild case. I've been a believer in this virus since the beginning. I want to be very clear about that. This was not something that I learned through getting the virus in any sort of way. But it is wild how, you know, I have two young kids and just like I had to separate myself entirely from my family. And that has been hard, you know. That's been hard for me, hard for my wife.
At least you've got an awesome tricked out basement.
I know. I'm lucky in that sense.
I've got an apartment, so if heaven forbid one of us comes down with it, there ain't no isolating. We're all going down.
We're all going. I was expecting everybody to, but when everyone tested negative, I was like, I'm staying away from the rest of you. One thing I did watch during the time was there was a very good Chicago Bulls and Milwaukee Bucks basketball game last Friday that unfortunately the Bulls lost, and also unfortunately we lost Alex Caruso for 2 months of the season as a result of an incredibly dirty play from one Grayson Allen. And the NBA decided to suspend him for just one game, which I guess has precedent. You know, personally speaking, I think he should have been suspended for the entire amount of time that Caruso will be out. I don't think that the dude has many basketball skills. He's kind of reminds me of Pat Beverly in the sense that he's just on the court to disrupt and anger people and injure players. And I don't really see any place for that in basketball. And it really is disappointing to me that the Milwaukee Bucks are standing behind him.
And he looks like Ted Cruz.
Yeah, he looks like Ted Cruz a lot.
He has the trifecta of awful. He looks like Ted Cruz. He went to Duke. And he's a dirty player. So between all those things, the chef Dale Talde, who I think was on one of the earlier seasons of Top Chef, was like big Chicago Bulls fans. He was like retweeting every bad tweet about Grayson Allen. So certainly Dale Talde, he feels your pain. But yeah,
between Grayson Allen and Aaron Rodgers, this was a great weekend for dunking on Wisconsin sports, which as a Chicagoan, that is something I celebrate endlessly.
Yeah, seriously, Aaron Rodgers losing to Jimmy Garoppolo and the Niners was some very sweet tea. On a last minute field goal, no less. Robbie Gould, good as gold.
Good as gold. Yeah, it was a good weekend for sports. It was worse weekends for sports could have happened while I was in quarantine. Last up here in our intro, we just want to give a shout out promo to Steve Gunn's residency that was just announced at Union Pool. Is that correct?
Yeah.
It is a free residency. It's absolutely amazing that he's doing this. These are on, correct me if I'm wrong, these are on Tuesday nights?
Yes. Tuesday nights. I think it's Tuesday the 1st, Tuesday the 8th, and then Tuesday the 15th.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. You got 3 weeks in early February where you've got Steve Gunn solo with Laura Ortman. February 8th, the Gunn-Trzynski duo, one of our favorite groups. With Bill Nace, And then February 15th, the Steve Gunn Band with Bing and Ruth, which is an incredible ambient duo that I highly recommend anyone out there seeing. Should be amazing. The free aspect of it is pretty special and pretty incredible that he's doing that at this point, you know, coming out of a pandemic. But I would, if I lived in New York City, this is yet another one of those reasons I'm just eternally jealous of not living in New York City, because these things don't happen in Denver.
I RSVP'd for the February 15th show because I'm always partial to Steve Gunn and his full band, and I've heard very good things about Bing and Ruth and whatever other guests will show up that evening. I know there was the awesome Steve Gunn, William Tyler residency at Union Pool in February of 2020, right? We were wide-eyed and innocent and thought there was going to be lots of awesome stuff at Union Pool for the rest of 2020. I got to one of those shows thinking this one will be equally interesting. So looking forward to that.
And Steve just released a EP that I'm excited to check out. M. Du Mokhtar is on one song. Natural Information Society is on a couple
oh, really?
Of songs. Circuit de You is on another song. Yeah, this just came out. Pulling it up right now. It is called Nakama EP. It came out today, January 26th, as we're recording. There's a take on Protection with M. Du Mokhtar. Two NIS songs, one song with Circuit to You, and one song with Bing and Ruth, which is really cool that he's doing this. I'm going to be checking this out the second after we finish talking here today. So before we get to our big discussion of the week, and we've got a big, big, big discussion of this week. We're very excited about this.
This is a fun one.
It's going to be a fun one. We want to recommend some podcasts that have recently come out here at Osiris Media. David, what is your first recommendation from Osiris Media?
I'm going to talk about a podcast I've spoken about before. This is the podcast entitled No Simple Road. This is the podcast where you get to hang out on the porch in Portland, Oregon with Aaron, Mel, and Apple. Very awesome crew. Workhorse is putting out quality podcasts. God, they were like, even when we started Beyond the Pond, they're one of like the Osiris OGs. So they do an interview with two members of the Owsley Stanley Foundation, I think a guy named Hawk, and then a star writer, Owsley, who I think was actually Owsley's son. Listeners of this podcast and guests will know that Stanley Owsley was both the Acid King and the designer, the mastermind behind the Grateful Dead's Wall of Sound, as well as did a lot of recording of many Dead shows. I think he was like the front of house guy for like the Carousel Ballroom, maybe Fillmore West. So lots of incredible sound recordings. And the purpose of the Owsley Stanley Foundation is they're a nonprofit who's been putting out a lot of Owsley's, or we should say Bear, that's the nickname everyone knows him as, putting out a lot of these concerts under the name Bear Sonic Journals. And the most recent one they put out was a Johnny Cash show from, I want to say, April of 1968. This was kind of like Johnny Cash meeting the hippies. And this is also shortly before his Live at Folsom Prison album came out. So this was kind of, he wasn't nearly as famous and popular as he was going to become. And it's a really cool, interesting recording. And they talk about how the mix is not what you would expect, in the sense that you have kind of like Johnny Cash's voice in the left and you have the twanging guitars in the right, and that the purpose is they really didn't want to mess with Bear's mix. All the Bear's Sonic Journals, they don't screw with the like original mixes. He believed that this is how the room should sound, this is how he wants things to sound. And it's just a very good conversation between the No Simple Road crew and the Owsley Stanley guys about what's come out, what's going to come out, the care that goes into each of the albums that they put out, how kind of the point of the nonprofit is to raise some money to preserve a lot of this stuff, which is on analog tape, because it's from the late 60s. A lot of it is in danger of like decaying after all this time. Just, you know, anybody who enjoys live music enjoys hearing about Owsley Stanley and his recordings. This is, there's a lot to dig into here.
That's fascinating. Yeah, the No Simple Road guys, like, I think I've said this before, but I'll say it again. Like, I don't know as many podcasts that have just such a vibe as that show.
Oh, yeah. It's just like you listen to it and you feel like you're on the porch with them, and that is such a special thing. I am going to recommend a podcast that we talked about last week in this segment, but released their first official episode with Osiris Media here today as of time of recording. That is The Great Beyond. The Great Beyond is Greg, Bruce, and Joey talking through Goose history, Goose new info, Goose interviews, Goose deep dives, Goose live recaps of Goose Tour, which is kicking off here today. Their first episode, called Born to Be Wild, which is a play on the new single released by Goose, Born, which came out about a week ago. They do this really cool thing where they look back at basically Goose over the last 2 years. I can't think of many bands that have had a 2 year journey the way that Goose has since early 2020. And even if you back it up into 2019, that Peach Fest set from summer 2019 is kind of where a lot of us became aware of this band. I had not listened to them prior to the fall of 2019. They play this very, very awesome middle of the day set at Peach Fest, had a huge crowd there, play this amazing version of Arcadia. And throughout the fall, there was a lot of time spent like listening through, okay, what is going on with this band? Wow, they can jam in a really phenomenal way. Their cover choices are absolutely incredible. And oh my God, their lyrics are really, really good. They chart that period, the fall 2019 tour, the spring 2020 tour that happened just ahead of the pandemic, the bingo tour that they played in June of 2020, where they were isolated in Connecticut, broadcast their shows in a way that few other bands were, the drive-in sets and shows from fall of 2020 that gave so many of us, even though we couldn't be in attendance, that like first sense of like a band playing a show that you had to listen back to and really vibe with throughout the fall of 2020. And then this amazing 2021 that the band had that resulted in some incredible shows. First couple times I saw Goose, as well as some incredible jams. So they chart that path. They talk with our good friend, Osiris Media CEO RJB, about his experiences following Goose, his time interviewing Goose in the early part of 2020, kind of where his thoughts are in terms of where the band is going. So it's a great episode. They'll release every other Wednesday here going forward, as well as every Tuesday. They will be doing live recaps through this winter tour of the previous week of tour. So keep an eye out for that. Those will be super fun as they're charting through kind of the way the band is playing in this soon-to-be unknown tour. Very excited to hear what we have in store for us with Goose 2022. So The Great Beyond, No Simple Road, two excellent podcasts here at Osiris Media. And with that, let's get to the big discussion of the week. So this middle section, you know, we use for a lot of different things. Sometimes, like last week, we gave you book recommendations from our favorite rock books. In the past, we've had interviews. We've done deep dives on specific bands. Dave had, and I want to give all credit to Dave because he came up with this, and it's one of my favorite things that we're going to do in the middle section here. He had this great idea. Why don't we build a fucking festival? It's going to be Beyond the Drop Festival. It's going to be a mix of everything that we have done throughout our time. This is our chance to curate a festival
where the biggest problem for us with the festival is that we want to see every single band. So we're going to do that.
Well, my big problem with the festival is being 42 and not wanting to stay in the field for 5 or 6 hours for a lot of bands that I may or may not like. So, I mean, I haven't been to a festival since 2008. I went to one All Points West in Jersey City. That was basically just like a Radiohead show at a bunch of opening bands. But this is a festival. Like, we always look at the festivals and think, oh, maybe we go to this. Yeah, maybe we go to this. We kind of like the ones, not so much like the Coachellas, the Bonnaroos. We like the ones that are like curated. So this is definitely a festival that's curated for dads in their late 30s and early 40s.
Yeah, this is like our take on Hopscotch or Big Ears or even Solid Sound or even, you know, yeah. we could do this festival at Riviera Maya, you know, just fly us down to Riviera Maya.
Certainly we could do it. Solid Sound is kind of like the inspiration for this. Or yeah, or like Riviera Maya. We're not overwhelming you with bands. This is curated.
The last festival I went to was Telluride Bluegrass Festival in 2019, and it was not your typical festival. It was very family-friendly, and it was amazing, and it reminded me of the joy of what a festival could be, because I'm right there with you. Like, the beauty of the streaming age is I'll just throw on kind of Bonnaroo shows as that festival's happening, or Coachella, and I'm just totally happy to do it from my living room, and I don't necessarily need to be like on site for it. So this is a festival we would be on site for. This is Beyond the Drop Festival, hopefully coming to you in spring 2023. I think that's our shooting date. We're still holding out hope for sponsors, but we have 12 categories. We're going to work from the small print all the way up to the headliner. And the cool thing with the small print here is that we get to feature bands that we love that we think should be elevated. So we're going to begin with the first category, our dream for smallest font bands that no one has heard of, but definitely, definitely deserve festival exposure and festival dollars, because part of the point of a festival is that you get paid as a band. So Dave, tell me, I think we had this, you know, be like 1 to 3 bands. Who would be your smallest font bands that nobody has heard of but definitely deserve festival exposure?
So I have 3 bands, and you probably will have heard of them if you've listened to Beyond the Pond or The Drop, but to average Joe festival goer probably has not. So I kind of have an idea of, like, if you want to get there early, you're pulling in, it's sunny, and you're hearing like dulcet tones coming from the stage. We're not rocking out now. We're easing you in. This is like tones kind of wafting over. Maybe you've taken the edible. The edible's starting to kick in. So we're going to start with Sus, being the awesome ambient country band that we simply love. Matt LaJoy, one of our favorite artists, workhorse, putting out tons of records of him playing these gorgeous guitar loops. He'd just sit there up there on stage with his glasses and his mustache playing the guitar with all these loops. The loops are like wafting over your head. You're like, this is incredible. What is this? You're staring up at the sun. It's fucking great. And then this band is actually playing the Treefort Fest in Idaho with really kind of small print, but that's okay because you're getting paid. Garcia Peoples. They got to go on early in the day because they're young dudes still getting their feet. Still getting their toes wet, but they would be an excellent festival draw, and I would love to see them at Beyond the Drop Fest.
I love it, and I'm in a very similar mindset with you. I have the wonderful harpist Mary Lattimore joining us on the early stage, kind of mid-afternoon. You're just kind of hanging out. Maybe you go and grab a little bit of there's that great food truck over there that makes like the best dumplings you've ever had. There's that other one over there that does really nice wraps. You go and grab like a cold coffee while you're just kind of like easing into the day. Like you said, your edibles just started to hit.
Mary Lattimore's Vietnamese coffee.
Love Vietnamese coffee. Mary Lattimore is perfect for that. I add to this Bitchin' Bajas, one of our favorite just kind of psychedelic jam bands that would perfectly fit the vibe of this. Bitchin' Bajas would just like kind of, you know, it'd be like hypnosis, just like, you know, sinking you into the vibe of the festival. And then the last band that I have for this category here, Dire Wolves. My number four record of 2019 was Dire Wolves. And I would have to imagine a lot of festival goers would like maybe have heard of their name, but they haven't really listened to them. And them in the live setting would be absolutely incredible. So we've got a great base to this festival. All right. Our next section. We love these guys, but a festival isn't the best environment to see them. So don't totally get the wrong idea, but there is someone out there who could probably check out this band and be like, I'm going to go and listen to that band again because there was something about them that really got me. Who do you have for that?
I have a band that me and Brian love, Low.
There so, it is.
Yeah. I take this from experience because I saw Low at Pitchfork Fest in 2013. I think it was like 4:30 in the afternoon. They were playing on like a ball field. And I'm just thinking, this is great, but this isn't how this should be experienced. This is like gothic, doomy songs from this awesome Mormon husband and wife that have been doing this forever. And now they're getting paid, but I'm eating a Chicago hot dog and drinking a beer. And this isn't where I should really be seeing Low. But maybe someone will think, you know, hey, this is great. And although I realize that a festival is not the best place for it, I'll buy the record when they come around for a club. I will go see them at that club. So.
Low is very much in line with the band that I chose because you want these bands to like, you want them to have the exposure that a festival gives them where someone hears that one song and they're like, I think I'll go back and check that out. But at the same time, you're like, I feel like I need to see this band when I'm just going to see this band. I selected the Natural Information Society for this, one of our favorite bands, a band that I don't think the festival environment is going to be the best setting for you to hear them. But at the same time, you know, if they play something off of Dissension at 4:30 in the afternoon on a smaller stage, and you're kind of sitting towards the back and you're just riding the hypnotic grooves, they might have an impact on you to you know, pique your curiosity. But the overall way to see Natural Information Society is going to be in a small club, maybe in the Hideout in Chicago. All right, moving forward, we get to some bigger tier bands here in our next segment. 90s band that you can't believe still exists. We are both, we're 5 years apart age-wise, but we are both children of the 90s when it comes down to it. The 90s hit us both immensely hard in terms of music. There are, if you check our Twitter DMs, there are a lot of old records that we admit may not hold up, may not be the best record, but at the time, I loved it. And as a result, we need to have a 90s band or 90s bands at this festival. Dave, who do you have for your 90s band?
Counting Crows. I don't think they ever broke up so much as they started putting out albums less frequently. But there's kind of been, I think they started putting out their live shows on Nugsnet. So clearly there's like somebody who still wants to see Counting Crows. I still ride hard for the first two Counting Crows albums, especially Recovering the Satellites. That's a great record.
Really is.
When I'm not doing podcasting, I'm actually a business attorney who drafts a lot of contracts. So I would draft the Counting Crows contract to say that if they play their cover of Big Yellow Taxi by Joni Mitchell, they don't get paid. So you wouldn't have to worry about that. I'd basically even say if you try to play anything off of like the Hard Candy record, that's not a good thing. But I actually just watched, I think it was on Hulu, it was like a Vice special about the 1990s and like the dark side of the 90s. And there was an episode all about the Viper Room, the club owned by Johnny Depp that like River Phoenix died outside of. And I didn't realize that Adam Duritz was like, he tended bar at the Viper Room. He was like Viper Room royalty because they just keep interviewing Adam Duritz throughout the whole documentary. He doesn't have his dreadlocks. So you're like, who is this? Like, he looks like the guy who used to host the show Man vs. Food. Adam Duritz is still talking about the Viper Room, rehashing whole times, and still being in Counting Crows. And believe me, when they play Long December, you're going to, like, clasp hands with your buddy and raise your pint, and you'll have a good time.
Round here, in, like, the middle of the day, like, 4:30 in the afternoon, just perfect. All right, so I went, admittedly, full I was in seventh grade when this record came out, and I can't believe this band still exists. This is going to throw a wrench in the overall vibe of the festival, but I may be the only person, like, side stage just losing my mind. I'm going Everclear. I'm going Everclear, and I'm going just focus on so much for the Afterglow and a little bit on whatever their second record was that had Santa Monica on it. But that's all I need you to hear. Nothing post-1998. Do not play anything off the American release. Do not play anything modern. Nobody needs to hear that. We're just focusing on 90s Everclear. Give me so much... I'm blanking on their song titles right now. Everything to Everyone. Give me that.
Heroin Girl.
Heroin Girl.
There Father of Mine.
Father of Mine, I Will Buy You a New Life. I mean, these are songs that, like, I've been proposing this since we started the drop. At some point, we are going to do an episode about So Much for the Afterglow, maybe next year for the 25th anniversary. But this was...
Yeah, I don't think we're going to do that.
We are. This was unquestionably one of the most important albums of my entire life. I listened to it on repeat for 4 or 5 months straight. It helped me understand the arc of the album, and we're going to have Everclear play those songs midday, low stakes set. You just go back, get some nostalgia, and then you move on to the jams. All right. Speaking of artists that nobody is asking for, but, you know, need to be at a festival, because this is a festival. We're trying to follow the rules of a festival. Band reunion that no one really asked for, because band reunions that people have asked for haven't come to fruition yet. So everyone's asking for certain bands to reunite, and they want them to reunite at a festival. Then there's the bands that no one's asking to reunite at this point in time. They come back together, they play a festival. Hey, man, they get that money. They're able to support their kids going off to college. God bless them. But nobody's asking for it, but they're still going to be there, and they're still going to draw a crowd. Who do you have?
I have, for this category, The Verve. They actually they broke up. I think they got back together in 2008, played some shows. Those shows were great. And then they broke up again. I think they played at the Glastonbury Fest, and Richard Ashcroft, like, threw a fit on stage and walked off or something. So, yeah, they don't exist now. It's just Richard Ashcroft solo shows, most of which are comprised of Verve songs anyway. I mean, this is one of those bands that, like you said, no one's asking for them to get back together. But if you see it on the festival, you're like, oh, okay, cool. I will like standing in a field and singing Bittersweet Symphony or rocking out to A New Decade or swing to The Drugs Don't Work and sign it. The Verve had a lot of great songs off their first three albums, and I think that people will be pleasantly surprised to see them in a field, which is kind of where they belong, playing to crowds. And it certainly, I know in the past we've talked about the thing where in the Britpop era there was always the front man and the brilliant guitarist. They're brilliant together, but when they're by themselves they are not nearly as brilliant. And I don't think this is borne out in any fashion better than Richard Ashcroft and Nick McCabe. They need each other very badly. And Beyond the Drop Fest will be a great opportunity for them to bury the hatchet and get paid. So
I'm into it. And they need to get paid because they didn't make any money off of Bittersweet Symphony. That's right. They immediately fell into a lawsuit, have not made a dime off of that record, after that song, which was... Talk about 1998, man. That song was everywhere. That music video was everywhere. All right, so I thought about I love the idea of The Verve because you've got like that mid-afternoon vibe of just hanging with them. Maybe like the light starts to dim out a little bit and you're like, oh, cool, I'll go check out The Verve.
A New Decade! Yeah.
I am going with a band that broke up officially last year. Everybody was blown away that they broke up because they were like, wait, you haven't actually done anything for 7 years. So I don't necessarily think there's like a demand for them to get back together. But if they got back together at a festival, it would absolutely fucking crush. And that is Daft Punk. Daft Punk at a festival is going to draw a ton of people. It is going to be absolutely just like it's going to be one of the best shows that you've seen at a festival. And if they're playing anything off of Random Access Memories or anything from like the 90s, early 2000s, like you're seeing a band that like is just going to have banger after banger after banger and put on a killer show.
They're a little out of our price range, though.
They're a little out of our price range, but I think that we're kind of like, hey, there's not really a demand for you guys at this point in time. You know, there's really no reason for you guys to get back together, but we're just going to bring you back because we think it could be good exposure for, you know, the eventual next record that's coming out in like 2026.
All right. So I love Daft Punk. Heck.
It'd be a great show, and nobody's asking for it, but it'd be a great show. All right, so our next segment here, this always happens when festival lineups are released. A band that you wonder why they're in larger print before realizing how many more people seem to actually like them. I'm really curious how you took this, because I took this category one way. Who do you have as a band that you have no idea how many fans there are, but suddenly you see them and they're in like the second largest print of the festival?
I have the long-running British techno band called Underworld. So, I love Underworld. I'm a huge fan. Joe Festival Goer thinks, like, why is this in big print? These are the guys that had, like, two songs off the, like, Trainspotting soundtrack. Granted, they don't probably have as many American fans as they do in the UK. But the funny thing about Underworld is that after... they've been around, I think, since 1993, and they kept going. They've got a ton of records. They've played a ton of shows, a ton of festivals, and kind of their output now has been some of the more interesting and adventurous stuff of their career. Like, they have this thing called the Drift Series, which has been a series of EPs that they turn into, like, a full-length, big collection record. They have a song that's like a half-hour song where they team up with The Necks, the avant jazz band from Australia. And let me tell you, they've got a lot of fans. Those fans know every song. They can constantly sell out, like, you know, 3,000-seat, 2,700-seat venues. And the fact is, they don't really play the States that often. And due to the radius clauses, which we will be sure to enforce, Beyond the Drop Fest may be some American fans' only chance to see Underworld. So they are going to come and check them out. And you're going to be extremely impressed, and you might leave with your new favorite band.
I think that's a really good selection for this festival, because you're absolutely right. They're a group that, when you hear them in the context of this overall festival, you're going to absolutely love them. I went with a British band as well, a band that had significant popularity in the 2000s, and then based on artistic direction, kind of fell off in terms of popularity. But when they get announced at a festival, they're always like very, very close to the top. And you realize that they can just draw a massive crowd. And that is Arctic Monkeys. And I would love to see Arctic Monkeys at this festival. Their 2018 record was one of my absolute favorite records of the year. And I feel like the vibe that we're going for here in this festival that kind of bridges old and new, they would be a great addition to this overall lineup.
I don't wonder why Arctic Monkeys wouldn't be in larger print. The song "Why Do You Only Call Me When You're High" has 736,482,992 streams on Spotify.
That's
do
amazing.
I want to know? Do I want to know? Is like 1.2 billion streams. That was in a Captain Morgan ad. Yeah,
they're huge, but they're also like they're in this weird place with rock history where like you can have 1.2 billion streams, but like how much effort is someone actually going to put into going and seeing a show and to like actually know that this band can play massive venues is eternally shocking to me, especially from like a rock standpoint.
All right, fair enough. I mean, those guys have big British festival experience. But seeing them at an American festival, I'd be totally into it.
Seeing them at an American festival playing the like 6 p.m., 7 p.m. slot, I think could be really good. All right, so we need some diversity at our festival. We need to make sure that we are showcasing lots of different voices. We need some hip-hop. Who are you bringing on board from a hip-hop standpoint at this festival?
So I will preface this by saying that I have sort of failed to keep up with the most new and cutting edge hip hop. It's a bit of a younger man's game. So most of the stuff I end up listening to is either like golden age stuff from the 90s or, you know, artists that have kind of aged like around my age, like their mid-40s, late-40s and whatnot. So this is kind of a bit of a layup. I'm going to say the Roots because I've seen them before and they're great live. And everyone loves them because now they're the house band and Fallon. And people love Questlove. Black Thought is a phenomenal MC. And I think they actually have a new record coming out this year. I think their last one maybe came out 4 or 5 years ago. It's somewhat very dark, and then you shoot your cousin. So on the eve of a new record coming out, I think this summer, when you know that, they're good. So it may not be the most adventurous, but I also know, unlike seeing the like Wu-Tang Clan, where it's just like a bunch of Wu-Tang nobodies shouting out choruses very loudly on stage, the Roots will put in the work. So that's what I've got.
That's definitely going to be a great early evening festival gig. You know, you go over to that stage, it's going to be packed with people. It's going to be awesome. I'm kind of in a similar boat with you. I was thinking about this. I was thinking Kendrick, but then I was thinking of our price range. I was also thinking Vince Staples. I've absolutely loved his work over the last couple of years. Tyler, the Creator, I would have loved to have there. I ultimately went with a Golden Age hip-hop group, Tribe Called Quest. They put out an amazing record in 2016. Midnight Marauders is still my favorite hip-hop album of all time. And having them at this festival, it's going to just like add an air of, you know, this historic aspect to it that we have with some of our other groups, and is just going to add to the overall vibe of the festival. So I'm going A Tribe Called Quest here as our hip-hop group for, well, we've got two of them for this overall festival.
Who are they bringing to replace Fife Dog? Did Mos Def do it once?
I think Mos Def did it once. I think this is where you get, you could bring along like a younger hip-hop star and have him stand in there.
Yeah, like someone who sounds like the 90s, like Joey Badass, could probably do it. Yeah,
that could work. All right, so stepping back into the festival, broad daylight. Maybe this is the second day of the festival. We need an avant jazz band that plays in broad daylight but adds credibility to the entire show. Dave, who do you have for this?
You mentioned them earlier. This is where I would put Natural Information Society. Because that's one of those bands that, you know, people who read like Aquarian Drunkard and Raven Sings the Blues and stuff look at them and say, like, oh, Natural Information Society's playing. I gotta go. This is where all the cool kids are gonna be. Plus, other bands get on stage. You can just take Joshua Abrams and you can take the stick that he plays and he can just like sit in for one or two songs and people will be like, wow, that's awesome. Like Natural Information Society sat in with the Verve. That was so cool. But, you know, they're going to play in the middle of the day and people are going to be getting, like, their hot dogs and their wraps and their Vietnamese coffee when it's going on. But someone will tape it. Someone will tape that set and it'll circulate and people will be like, wow, that was pretty awesome. Let's see these guys in the club.
Yeah, I think they fit both categories because, you know, they're definitely a band that, like, you have to kind of know the right places to look to discover a band like this or the right people to follow to discover a band like this. But if you see them at a festival, it's that very quick entry point of, oh, man, this band, this is the band for me. I am going with Kamasai Washington here. I saw him open up with his full band for Herbie Hancock back in 2019. It's still one of the best concerts I've ever seen. You throw him on here, he can sit in with the Roots, he can sit in with Tribe Called Quest, he can sit in with Natural Information Society, hell, he could sit in with Garcia Peoples and add an incredible aspect to their overall show, or low in that sense. He is one of my favorite recording artists of the last 10, 15 years, and having him on stage here for this festival adds a ton of credibility and adds a ton of interest for a wide variety of the audience. We're getting close to the end here. We're building out a really nice festival here. I love this curation. We've got 2 to 3 small print bands who should be in larger print, but fill out the smaller print of the overall festival. Dave, who do you have as your small print bands that should be in larger print?
I have 2 older bands and 1 younger band. I've got Spiritualized, who are really good at playing the festivals. They know how to do it. They can fill out a huge amount of sound on stage, and they have the new record coming out this February, so that makes sense. I have Slow Dive, one of our very, very favorite 90s shoegaze bands, who put out an amazing record in 2018, and I think they also have some new material on the horizon. Of course, Neil Halstead from Slow Dive also produced that awesome Mary Lattimore record from last year. And then as a younger band, to kind of fill out the newer emo contingent, I've got Foxing, because they're really good live. Not all these bands can bring it on stage, but they absolutely can, and I really enjoyed their most recent album, Draw Down the Moon, from 2021. So they can certainly get a somewhat younger contingent, and these guys can rock the fuck out.
I love it. I love these three bands being here, because you're absolutely right. These are going to be on, like, they're not going to sell festival tickets, but they are going to tell that person who's debating whether or not to go to a festival, oh shit, Spiritualize is going to be there as well. Okay, I'm going to go because of all these other bands that are here. All right, my first band is a newer band, relatively speaking, that I think will have a similar vibe to these three, Parquet Courts. One of those bands that is not going to sell festival tickets, but is ultimately going to serve a great purpose and put on a killer show at a festival. I also have my favorite, one of my absolute favorite singer-songwriters, who's going to play a mellow singer-songwriter set that is not going to sell festival tickets, but should absolutely be here, and that is Bill Callahan. Talk about someone else who could bring Kamasai Washington out or could play with Natural Information Society and just make some incredible music. He just put out an awesome album with Bonnie Prince Billy that I absolutely love earlier here in 2022. And then finally, a band that should be in larger print just because of the output and the sonic appeal of them. They throw their own goddamn festival for all things considered, but they will probably be a smaller bill or smaller name festival or smaller name print on a festival lineup. That is Woods, one of my favorite bands of all time. But you put them at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you are just in a great, great spot.
Yeah, Woods would be a great 2 o'clock in the afternoon kind of sunny band. Definitely, you got like your lawn chair out, drinking, eating something, and they're playing like Moving to the Left. That'd be great.
It would be awesome, and like it'd be low stakes for them, but it would also be a great opportunity to expose them to a lot of listeners here. All right, we're moving into some really, really cool categories here as we finish this thing out. We've got four more categories. We're building something out great here. Band playing a past notable album in full. This seems to always happen at festivals. This is such a great new appeal of festivals and of you know, rock history right now. Dave, who do you want to see play a past notable album in full?
I'd argue that most bands don't want to do this. It's more of a realization that, well, maybe our past best work is behind us, but, you know, we should still celebrate it when we were good. If it brings the people out, then that's fine. And then we can still put in stuff out. Maybe we got, like, another great record in us. I don't know. But so for the band playing their past notable album in full, I have Sufjan Stevens doing Illinois, because that's an amazing record. He puts on an amazing show. And let's face it, nothing he's done since then has been quite as good. I mean, if you want to be generous, yeah, Carrie and Lowell was a very good record, but that's...
Age of Ads, both those were great.
Age of Ads was good on stage. I don't listen to that record anymore, ever. But the concert behind Age of Ods was phenomenal. Carrie and Lowell is a great album, but it's not really a festival album just because it's so goddamn morose. And he put out, he does like weird soundtrack stuff, weird noise records with his like stepdad. Like, you know, don't give me any of that. Just give me Illinois. People will come out. They'll love it. They'll do a fucking like balloon drop during Chicago. It'll do gangbusters.
It'd be a great 7 p.m. set, you know, yeah. Like not the headliner, but just like before the headliner. Great, like early evening, you're hanging out. There's a ton of energy. It's been building all day, and Sufjan comes out and plays all of Illinois. So I was thinking in terms of, you know, historical dates here and anniversaries, and I was also thinking in terms of, what do I want to see in concert?
And it comes down to my favorite album came out officially 20 years ago this spring and should be played in a concert setting. It's not the most upbeat show, but like when this band plays these songs in a live setting, in a festival setting, you know that everybody is going to be singing along to Jesus, etc. And so we're going to hear Wilco play Yankee Hotel Foxtrot in full about 7 p.m. on the second night of the festival, and it's going to be an absolutely incredible experience.
Who would ever want to see that? I'm just kidding.
Me.
They played in full at Solid Sound a few years ago.
Yeah, they did this really cool thing where they played...
Being There.
They played Being There for the main set and that in full, and then they came out for the encore and they played Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. And it's a really wild listening experience because both of those albums, like back to back, it's basically a full concert. But like for them to come out for the encore, everybody thinks we're getting one or two songs. They start playing I'm Trying to Break Your Heart, then they play Camera, and they play Radio Cure, and oh my God, they're playing the entire record. It's a great, great listen to go back to. I think it's up on Nugsnet. All right. I'm really curious if we have the same answer here. Our next category, the token jam band. We have to have a jam band at this festival. You have to have a jam band. Maybe this is our late night set, is this jam band playing. Who do you have as your jam band for our festival?
I had one band. Now I'm wondering if I mind if it should be one other band. No, I'll just go with first thought, best thought. I didn't try too hard here. It's got to be Goose. They're playing.
It's got to be Goose.
You know?
It's got to be Goose. Got to have Goose play a festival like this. They're at the perfect stage in their career. And I think that this is our late night set. This begins at midnight, and they play until about 4 o'clock in the morning. And it's one of those historic middle of the night sets that happens at a festival, similar to like My Morning Jacket playing in the middle of the night at Bonnaroo, Humphreys McGee. So many bands throughout history have played that middle of the night slot at a festival, and it's just like completely crushed. So Goose gets the 12 a.m. to 4 a.m. slot at our festival. I think it's a good spot for them.
Two categories to go.
So we did... originally, the band reunion that no one has really asked for, but band reunions that people have asked for haven't come to fruition yet. This is that band reunion that when the festival is announced, people are like, they're playing at that fucking festival. Like, this is like 2013, 2014 when My Bloody Valentine was playing festivals. This is like, I never thought I'd see this band again. What do you have, Dave?
I'm curious if we had the same answer to this. I think we probably will, because as you know, we didn't tell each other our answers in advance. So I have The Walkmen. This is a band.
Interesting.
Yeah. This is a band, The Walkmen. They were listed as like every New York musician's favorite band. And I think they broke up in 2012 after the release of their swan song, Heaven. And at that point, they all had young children. Now, that was 10 years ago. So those children had grown up a bit, and they wanted to see Dad rocking out. And at this point, I think all the Walkmen are probably in like their late 40s, maybe early 50s, and they could still be in their late 40s. They're still young enough they can do this. Their legend has grown. All of their past records, it's a pretty bulletproof discography. And they're definitely at the point where you had like Meet Me in the Bathroom got published. I mean, I think that this is, the iron is as hot as it's ever been for a band to strike. And Hamilton Lighthouse's solo stuff is perfectly fine, but none of it's as good as what he's able to do in The Walkmen. But you get these guys up on stage, they drop into the rat, people lose their shit. So that's who I have is the reunion at Beyond the Drop Fest, which will send a lot of dudes in their early 40s into a hysterical frenzy to see this band on stage.
I did not select The Walkmen, but I fully support The Walkmen. It is an excellent, excellent choice here. I would do anything to see The Walkmen live. I went outside of our budget. I apologize. We're going to make this up through ticket sales, okay? We'll get a great beer sponsor. We're going to
We're going to sell this festival out based on this band alone. This band may actually overshadow our headliner. Never thought this band would get back together again, but can you imagine releasing our festival poster and people seeing the second line of the festival, the Talking Heads?
Yeah, all right. Not realistic, but okay.
Not realistic at all. None of these reunions are. I don't think the Walkmen are getting back together right now.
Rough realism, anyway. Okay.
No, I mean, I see the Walkmen wanting to get back together again. It seems like there was an amicable split. It does not seem like the Talking Heads had an amicable split. But, you know, David Byrne is currently touring behind mainly Talking Head songs through American Utopia. I feel like if you come to them with the right festival setting and say just one gig and then it's over, just come out, play everything that we want to hear. The Talking Heads being on that second line of the festival, this is what is going to sell our festival out and have people saying, we got to go to Beyond the Drop Festival next year.
Well, yeah, this would have people flying in from like Indonesia to go see like Beyond the Drop Festival if like they're actually having like a full-fledged Talking Heads reunion with like the Stop Making Sense choreography and whatnot.
This elevates it from this small curated festival to like what Bonnaroo 2002 was, where people were like, I don't care. I have to drop everything and go to this because it was the first time that something like this happened. So this elevates us in a way that I don't think we intended to from the start, but we have to go with a band like Talking Heads.
Yeah, admittedly, it is kind of weird that David Byrne, American Utopia on Broadway, that's like almost entirely, well, no, I mean, it's his most recent solo record plus lots and lots of Talking Heads songs. So it would seem like his beef is with the members of the Talking Heads and the wanting to avoid nostalgia as opposed to the songs themselves. So.
Yes, but he's not avoiding nostalgia by playing these songs. So I think I think we can do this. I think we can do this. He doesn't need to wear the white suit. He doesn't need to run at any point during the show. We just got to see the Talking Heads up on stage, walk away, and people be like, wow, that actually happened.
I can't throw him a huge pile of money and says you can.
It's an advance that we're giving
you. All right.
Our headliner, I'm curious if we have the same headliner here. I've got to imagine that we do.
Well,
who is headlining Beyond the Drop Festival?
Again, I was going for realism in the sense that this is a band that they kind of have their big coming out. It's been building. It's a band that Brian and I have loved very, very much from the beginning. It may not be very creative if you've gotten to know us, but I don't see how any Brian and Dave Fest can't have the War on Drugs headlining.
The War on Drugs is it.
Yeah.
It has to be.
Has to be.
So here's what I'm thinking. The War on Drugs headline Sunday night. The Talking Heads headline Saturday night.
Okay.
You know? Yes. It's a great vibe. You get the reunion on Saturday night. People are on a buzz. Then they go see Goose and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe Goose just played that well. They come back the next day. They see Sus, Bitchin' Bajas and Garcia Peoples and Low and a Counting Crows set that they're like, oh my God, the fucking Counting Crows. Then they work up, they go and see The Verve, they play, go see Underworld, they go see A Tribe Called Quest, they go and they see Woods at that point in time and Parquet Courts, and then they go and they see Wilco play Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, followed by the Talking Heads, the War on Drugs closing out the festival. That sounds like a pretty amazing Sunday to me. What do you say?
It sounds like something I would have to attend. I'd have to get a babysitter.
I feel like I have.
I'd have to leave the kids with Grandma and Grandpa in Connecticut and just go to town.
I'm right there with you, man.
All right.
Beyond the Drop Festival coming to you, hopefully, in to a festival ground near you.
All right. That was a ton of fun. We built a festival. We built a festival, man. We built a festival. Now we just need to sell
the
festival.
What was that bad Cameron Crowe movie? We bought a zoo.
We
built a festival.
We don't know how to build a festival, but, you know, I envision myself being, who is the guy who works for Fish and is in the Great Went scene of Bittersweet Motel? Russ, he does all the art installations for their festivals.
Don't know.
Okay. I'm blanking on his name, but he's the guy who they're raising up the stage for the Great Went, and he goes, "What day is it? Tuesday? All right, we're 6 hours behind schedule. Oh, wait, no, it's Monday? Oh, we're 4 hours ahead of schedule." Like, that's just my vibe the entire weekend setting up for the festival. We're just floating, man, at that point in time. So, a lot of fun doing our own festival. Hopefully that can come to fruition. We'll see. Who knows? We're going to close out this episode with two quick segments here. We are going to recommend new albums for the first time here in 2022, a year that I just want to note has been really great thus far. It's been a very deep year of music. I have already three or four records in my top albums of 2022 playlist, which I'm excited to continue revisiting. But we are going to talk about a couple records right now. Dave, what are you going to recommend for us?
I have a new album by the Danish trio Papir, who we talked about last year because they put out a record in early 2021 called Jams, which was them just melting your face for 75 minutes. So they have a new album. It's their seventh album. It's called Seven, just like I think most of their prior albums are named on numbers. And this album is one long song and three shorter songs. This album is not a face melter, but rather a face freezer. This is the Papir record where you can see your breath as it's very cold, it's icy, it's ambient, and while certainly in the past I've described the band as almost like a shoegaze Jane's Addiction with their sheer rock power, this is much more patient, it's much more ambient, it's very pretty, and it still has what I call the signature Papir drum sound. It's interesting, you can tell a band right away by how their drums sound, and that's still the case here. But it's still it's very dynamic, and it's excellent for long walks, for naps, for your ambient afternoon interludes. And it's, despite being slow, it's actually quite exciting in a sense to see Papir branch out in this fashion. So, Seven by Papir. And we're just going to play a little snippet of the first song, which I think is like 7.1 through 7.3. It's 17 minutes long, and we're going to pick out a nice portion for you.
One of my favorite singer-songwriters released a record here in early 2022. That is Jake Xerxes Fusel. Jake released a fantastic album back in 2019 that went by the title of Out of Sight. That was in my top 20 for the year. His new record, Good and Green Again, is, you know, it's one thing when you're like discovering a new band and you're like, oh my God, I love this song and this, I love this album. And like, it's a totally new vibe. It's another feeling when a
Old Reliable comes back and releases a record, and especially someone on the level of Jake Xerxes' Fusel, where there's not a ton of evolutionary next steps that happen within this record. It's just a really pleasant record to listen to right now. It really just hits a vibe of midwinter kind of warmth and comfort. Great songwriting, really amazing acoustic guitar throughout. And Jake's voice is one of those just like most comforting voices that you can imagine hearing in larger kind of North Carolina indie folk rock. So Good and Green Again is the record. I'm going to play a snippet off of the track Breast of Glass.
I wish I was in London, some of the seaport town. A step of foot on the steamboat, I'd sail the ocean round, sail it round. Don't you remember, Molly, you gave me your right hand. You said if we ever married, I would be the man, I'd be the man.
All right, so to close out this episode, we are going to take a final swing at the 2000s as we move through our 5-year steps back in time. We are talking 2002. Before we jump into this, Dave, as I always ask, where were you in 2002? What are your memories?
2002 was my first year of law school, so I was going to law school classes and kind of slowly mentally coming out of the trauma. That was September 11, 2001. I probably wasn't studying quite as hard as I should have been, probably going out to too many clubs in New York, too many late nights, kind of a feeling of like, well, hey, who knows what's going on? This could all end tomorrow, so let's just like stay out till 3 o'clock in the morning when in fact I probably should be studying harder. But I'm going to talk about a record that came out in early 2002. This is 2002. This is also kind of, you had like your Yeah Yeah Yeahs, your Interpol. This is sort of like the beginning of like the New York return to rock and roll. But this album's got nothing to do with that. This is an album that came out in February of 2002 called Source Tags and Codes by And You Will Know Us by the Trail of the Dead. So this album is the perfect example of how in the early 2000s, Pitchfork can make your ass and then proceed to break your ass. So this album was famous because it got a 10. The writer, Matt LeMay, gave this record a perfect 10 on Pitchfork. So when I saw that, I'm like, oh, I should go check it out. And it's a great record. It's extremely noisy, bombastic, screamy. I think it eventually got lumped in with emo wave. I mean, it's pretty emo to me. It doesn't have anything to do with the cool hipster New York bands. I think these guys are from Austin, Texas. Just a screaming, loud, bombastic emo prog record that still holds up to this day. So when I say Make You and Break You, the follow-up came out 3 years later called Worlds Apart. I think Nick Sylvester and Pitchfork proceeded to give that record a 4. And then that kind of didn't derail their career. They kept going. They put out a lot of records. And they put out their 10th record in 2020, which doesn't sound that much different than records they're putting out in 2002. But it was kind of an interesting time to illustrate how Pitchfork could kind of like control a narrative of a sort. I mean, I kind of lost track of this band after the Worlds Apart record. Not necessarily because of Pitchfork, but it kind of wasn't a sound that I was as interested in going forward. But this album rocks, holds up, definitely a moment in time. So we're going to play a little bit of the bombastic opening track, It Was There That I Saw You. Yeah.
All right, so 2002, I was a senior, I was finishing up my junior year of high school, and I was kind of in the same vibe. I started my junior year of high school with September 11th, and the rest of the year was kind of like hung over by this eternal sense of fear. What is coming? What is happening? I would end up seeing Tab, the best Tab show I've ever seen, at the end of 2002. I saw some good concerts throughout 2002. It was a year that I was kind of ramping up for this next big change. I was, you know, really focused on graduating high school and getting on with going to college and kind of leaving Chicago behind. So it was the last year where I spent entirely in Chicago, which is kind of weird to think back on and think about what that vibe was like. But I wanted to just quickly, as I like to do, especially when we're in the modern era, go through the top 10 list from Pitchfork, because it's such a snapshot in time, and the record I'm going to talk about is such a snapshot in time as well. So Pitchfork's 2002 top 10 was Liars, They Threw Us All in a Trench and Stuck a Monument on Top, Sonic Youth, Murray Street, Boards of Canada, Gio Gatti, amazing record. I almost talked about that for this section. 7, Knot Twist, Neon Golden. 6, Spoon, Kill the Moonlight. We talked about Gaga, Gaga, Gaga last time. Spoon Records in the 2000s were consistently making the top 10 of Pitchfork's top 10 list. 5, The Flaming Lips, Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots. Huge, huge record. 4, The Books, Thought for Food. 3, Dave just talked about them, and You Will Know Us by the Trail of Dead, Source Tags and Codes. 2, Rob Mitchum, our good friend Rob Mitchum, wrote about Wilco's Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, ending his assessment with, "Call it dad rock if you must, but if the day comes when dads are mowing lawns to the death rattle of Radio Cure, I won't complain." And 1, I think that this is slightly regrettable for a lot of Pitchfork listeners out there, Interpol, Turn On the Bright Lights.
No, it was my favorite record of 2002.
It's a great record. I think I've heard a lot of people be like, I don't think that was the number one record of the year, but I don't know. I think it really speaks to where Pitchfork was at in 2002 in a really clear way. So I'm going to talk about a band and an album, or a band that we talked about in our previous segment, The Walkmen, their debut record, Everyone Who Pretended to Like Me Is Gone. The Walkmen were formed 2 years prior to this album, with members of Jonathan Fireeater and the Recoys coming together. And they're just this fully formed New York band. They sound kind of like a daylight version of The National in some cases. They use really, their focus throughout their history has been on using kind of archaic instrumentation and really pure acoustic sounds while experimenting within that. Hamilton Lighthizer has a voice like no other, and his lyrical choices and the way that he emphasizes words is just fascinating. And this record kind of feels like a punk record. It feels like a band that is going to absolutely explode onto the larger scene. It is a fantastic album, one of my favorite records of the last 20 years, and a record, though, that does not get the best new music. I don't think the best new music category existed yet at Pitchfork, but it gets an 8.7, which I'm really curious if this album came out in the context of 2022, what do you think this would get? Would this crack a 7.5?
This you get the Gentleman 7.3.
Yeah, kind of feels that way. It's kind of crazy to look back at Pitchfork and see Source Tags and Codes and Everyone Who Pretended to Like Me Is Gone getting an 8.7 and a 10. So we're going to play the second song off of the record. They kind of intro the record with their winning, and then they go into this amazing take off of Wake Up.
Joke is told without it.
All right. Big episode. Thank you all for hanging with us here as we built out our own festival. I hope that you enjoyed this.
Yeah, big episode, but big entertaining episode. If you're going to make a festival, it's going to be big. Big festival.
Got to be big.
Big episode.
Got to be big.
So, if you've gotten this far, as we always say, thank you very, very much for hanging with us. We'll be back in a week. We will still be smack-talking Grayson Allen. We will still have ideas in our heads for festivals. Maybe the festival will look totally different next week. I don't know. But at any rate, we will keep you informed. We will keep you entertained. We will hold hands and say kumbaya and all come together for The Drop.
Osiris.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.